I heard the killers call my name. They were on the other side of the wall. Less than an inch of plaster and wood separated us. She's here. We know she's here somewhere. Find her. Find Immaculee. There were many voices, many killers. I could see them in my mind. My former friends and neighbors moving through the house, carrying spears and machetes, and calling my name. I have killed 399 cockroaches. Immaculee will make 400. It is a good number to kill. I cowered in the corner of our tiny secret bathroom with the 7 other women hiding for their lives. The killer's voices clawed at my flesh. I felt as if I were lying on a bed of burning coals, like I'd been set on fire. And my mind echoed with one thought. If they catch me, they will kill me. If they catch me, they will kill me. If they catch me, they will. The killers were just outside the door, and I knew that at any second they were going to find me. I wondered what it would feel like when the machete slashed through my skin and cut deep into my bones.
It's the COI Podcast.
Hello from Brooklyn. I'm Sergey Burbank, Coordinating Director of Conflict of Interest Theater Company. The COI Podcast combines a love of literature with a love of performance, and for the next few episodes, we'll show that love even more than before as we present live recordings of the COI Podcast presented before an audience. In the summer of 2010, the COI Podcast presented live recording sessions over the course of 4 evenings as part of the Bococa Arts Festival at the Archip Gallery Theater in Brooklyn. We've never recorded the podcast outside the COI Podcast Central, so this was an experiment. You'll notice some rough aspects to the audio, everything from creaking chairs, echoing voices, and street-level traffic. Our performers and audiences rolled with it and had a great time. I invite you to do the same for the same effect. Immaculee Ilibagazia is a Rwandan author and motivational speaker. She's also a Roman Catholic and Tutsi. Left to Tell, Discovering God Amidst the Rwandan Holocaust, is an autobiographical work detailing how she survived for 91 days with 7 other women during the Rwandan genocide in a damp and small bathroom, no larger than 3 feet long and 4 feet wide. Immaculee is the recipient of the 2007 Mahatma Gandhi Reconciliation and Peace Award. Iriamime Oniha was born in Lagos, Nigeria, and is an actress currently residing in Brooklyn, New York. Among other roles, she appeared in COI's 2008 revival of Stephen Belber's McReel. Here's Iriamime Oniha performing an excerpt from Immaculee Ilibagazia's memoir, Left to Tell.
I heard the killers call my name. They were on the other side of the wall. Less than an inch of plaster and wood separated us. She's here! We know she's here somewhere. Find her. Find Immaculee. There were many voices, many killers. I could see them in my mind. My former friends and neighbors moving through the house, carrying spears and machetes, and calling my name. I have killed 399 cockroaches. Immaculee will make 400. It is a good number to kill. I cowered in the corner of our tiny secret bathroom with the 7 other women hiding for their lives. The killer's voices clawed at my flesh. I felt as if I were lying on a bed of burning coals, like I'd been set on fire. And my mind echoed with one thought. If they catch me, they will kill me. If they catch me, they will kill me. If they catch me, they will. The killers were just outside the door, and I knew that at any second they were going to find me. I wondered what it would feel like when the machete slashed through my skin and cut deep into my bones. I thought of my brothers and my dear parents, wondering if they were dead or alive and if we would soon be together in heaven. I put my hands together, clasped my father's rosary, and silently began to pray. Oh, please, God, please help me. Don't let me die like this, not like this. Don't let these killers find me. You tell us in the Bible that if we ask, we shall receive. Well, God, I am asking. Please, make these killers go away. Please, don't let me die in this bathroom. Please, God, please, please, please save me. Save me. The killers moved from the house, and we all began to breathe again. They were gone, but they would be back many times over the next 3 months. I believe that God had spared my life, but I'd learn during the 91 days I spent trembling in fear with 7 others in a closet-sized bathroom that being spared is much different from being saved. And that lesson forever changed me. It is a lesson that, in the midst of mass murder, taught me how to love those who hated and hunted me, and how to forgive those who slaughtered my family. I knew that my family was at peace, but I couldn't shake the crippling sorrow that seized my heart whenever I envisioned how they had been killed. Every night, I prayed to be released from my private agony, from the nightmares that haunted my sleep and troubled my days. It took a while, but God answered my prayers by sending me a dream. I was in a helicopter, flying over my family's house, but I was trapped in a dark cloud. I could see Mom, Dad, Damascene, and Vianney high above me, standing in the sky and bathed in a warm white light that radiated tranquility. The light intensified and spread across the sky until it engulfed the dark cloud hiding me. And suddenly, I was with my family again. Damascene looked at me with a joyful glow and gave me his brilliant smile. "Hey, Immaculee, it's good to see we can still make you happy. You've been gloomy far too long and must stop all this crying. Look at the wonderful place we're in. Can you see how happy we are? If you continue to believe that we're suffering, you'll force us to return to the pain we've left behind. I know how much you miss us. But do you really want us to come back and suffer? No. No, Damascene. Don't come back here. Wait for me there, and I will come join you all. When God is done with me in this life, I will come to you. We'll be here waiting, dear sister. Now heal your heart. You must love, and you must forgive those who have trespassed against us." My family slowly receded into the sky until they disappeared into the heavens. I was still hovering over my house, but I was no longer in a dark cloud and no longer in a helicopter. I was flying like a bird above my village, above the pastor's house and the French camps, above all the forests and rivers and waterfalls of my beautiful country. I was soaring above Rwanda. From that night onward, my tears began to dry and my pain eased. By sending me that dream, God had shown me that my family was in a place beyond suffering. He had also shown me that I had to make another trip to my village. I arrived at the prison late in the afternoon and was greeted by Samana, the new burgomaster of Kibuye. Samana had been teacher before the genocide, as well as a colleague and good friend of my dad's. As burgomaster, Samana was a powerful politician in charge of arresting and detaining the killers who terrorized our area. He had interrogated hundreds and knew better than anyone which killers had murdered whom. "Do you want to meet the leader of the gang that killed your mother and Damascene?" "Yes, sir, I do." I watched through Samana's office window as he crossed a courtyard to the prison cell and then returned, shoving a disheveled, limping old man in front of him. I jumped up with a start as they approached, recognizing the man instantly. His name was Felicin, a successful businessman whose children I'd played with in primary school. He had been a tall, handsome man who always wore expensive suits and had impeccable manners. I shivered, remembering that it had been his voice I'd heard calling out my name when the killers searched for me at the pastor's. Felicin had haunted me. Samana pushed Felicin into the office, and he stumbled onto his knees. "Stand up, killer!" Samana shouted. "Stand up and explain to this girl why her family is dead. Explain to her why you murdered her mother and butchered her brother. Get up, I said. Get up and tell her." But the battered man remained hunched and kneeling, too embarrassed to stand and face me. His dirty clothing hung from his emaciated frame. His skin was sallow, bruised and broken. His once handsome face was hidden beneath a filthy matted beard, and his bare feet were covered in open running sores. "He looted your parents' home and robbed your family's plantation in Makuli. After he killed Rose and Damasin, he kept looking for you. He wanted you dead so he could take over your property. Didn't you, pig? What do you have to say to Immaculate?" Felicin was sobbing. I could feel his shame. He looked up at me for only a moment, but our eyes met. I reached out, touched his hands lightly, and quietly said what I'd come to say. "I forgive you."
The COI podcast is made possible through the generosity of donors to Conflict of Interest Theater Company and is available streaming on the web at conflicttheater.podomatic.com. You can also find us by searching for The COI Podcast in the iTunes podcast directory. Read our blog at conflicttheater.blogspot.com. For more information on the company and its productions, visit us on the web at coitc.org. Graphic design is by Eunice Inquimboy. Legal advice, Paul Renitz. Special thanks to Gamze Ceylon, Anne Galloway, Jennifer Rathbone, Eileen Trilly, Jason Updike, and Sam Van Halgren. Questions, comments, and submissions can be sent to conflictinfo@gmail.com.